We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crowe Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Happy Monday to you. And it is a Monday, October 28th, celebratory edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports, kicking off live on 1037 The Game. For the next 2.5 hours, Ben Love, alongside the famous Clint D., ready to roll and bring you home from inside the 237 Roof Studios, presented by Lafayette Roofing. Yes, we're going to lead with LSU over Auburn. You won't have to wait long for the Saints' turn at our mic as well. We'll get there more in the next segment. But Tigers, the LSU version, 23, Auburn, you know, their Plainsman War Eagle version, 20. And okay, so as I kind of suspected, at some point in SEC play, LSU was forced to play a game in tighter quarters, closer margins, not basketball and grass. And today, I'm here to tell you that it does not matter how you pass the test. All that matters is Ed Orgeron's group. They did pass it, and they definitely had a number of things against them on Saturday. Sometimes it was an arm kind of held behind their back, and it was self-inflicted. Special teams faceplant would be the biggest thing. And I don't have to remunerate to you how bad that was and from how many different angles. Special teams, for the first time all year, was a real, true sore spot for the LSU Tigers. Some things weren't in their control, like the field conditions. And while Auburn had to play in it too, that kind of hinders the ability of basketball and grass. That, I think, made it difficult for a lot of things LSU wanted to do offensively, especially as the game went on. And then there are some things that the opponent just does to impose their will. And I will tell you that Kevin Steele had the best game plan yet to go up against Joe Burrow and LSU's offense. It helps that he has the horses up front with Davidson and Brown to run that type of system. But that was masterful from Kevin Steele, a former LSU defensive coordinator. He put Burrow in a pickle for a lot of that first half. LSU had to settle for dink and dunk. There wasn't a lot else that was on the menu, especially in the first half of that ball game. And yet with all those things that were going against LSU, in the eighth and final game before a bye week, and then you get Bama, with all the potential distractions that could have been swirling, wouldn't you know it that the defense got it done? And LSU's defense gave a lot of reason to believe in the remainder of the season with the way that Aranda's group played. Already we've seen that Jacoby Stevens, your SEC Defensive Player of the Week, he was magnificent. I thought LSU got landmark performances from a number of different guys on that side of the ball. Glenn Logan, the D-line, hands up against the shorter quarterback in Bo Nix. There were a lot of things. Michael Divinity, I mean, out of a cannon on a number of QB blitzes up the middle, around the edge. LSU's defense, very, very good, especially when it mattered. It was one-way traffic for much of that second half because the defense kept getting off of the field. Now, for its part, Joe Burrow and LSU's offense, I didn't think they would have the type of success running that they did between the 20s, and that credit goes to 22. Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I think that was his best game in an LSU uniform. Most meaningful performance. He was good against Georgia last year, rang up some numbers against A&M last year, but in a game where they needed him, I mean, that four-play all-Clyde drive in the third quarter was a loud statement in that ball game. And I thought that Burrow and the receivers, in particular Chase, did enough when they could. But here's what's interesting to me. LSU has become, in so many ways, a little bit more of that Big 12 type of team that nobody really ever wanted to admit to. And I saw another reason why in that ballgame Sunday. Call me up, tell me if you agree, disagree. Ben, you're crazy. Okay, Ben, that's spot on. Let me know. 706-0111. If you saw what I did, LSU's offense had a hard time getting under center inside of the 5-yard line or inside of 3rd-and-1, 4th-and-1, lining up and going smash mouth over somebody. That was one of the most jarring, I mean, literally almost whiplash moments with my neck to make me realize you're not in Kansas anymore, Toto. And yeah, the Kansas pun's appropriate because, I mean, it's not Les Miles time anymore. And we're several years removed from it, but it's still the first year with this offense, at this flow, with this level of success. And it's weird to think, and you got to give a lot of credit to Auburn's defense. They were unbelievable when it got to those, you know, goal line, tight, short situations. LSU couldn't get it in. And even when they went for it, 4th-and-goal, they ran the old Michael Thomas play, that quick little wide receiver slant slash screen to Jamar Chase. Couldn't get it in there either. They tried every which way, couldn't do it. And so suddenly, it's just interesting to me, the way we've looked at Oklahoma for years, the way, frankly, I've kind of looked at Mississippi State for years under Dan Mullen. When you spend the whole damn game in shotgun, okay, gets a little difficult to get under center and go smash mouth with somebody that has a legit front seven and a really, really good elite defensive line. And again, what I'll say for Auburn, we went into the game wondering, will this be the best defense that LSU plays? Personnel-wise, can't tell you if they're better than Florida. I think it's pretty darn close. Scheme-wise, I think they had the right game plan drawn up. But LSU survived. The Tigers have advanced. They are the number one team in the AP poll. And if you don't think a lot of people around the country, not just us, in our football-centric bubble in South Louisiana, thinking about the purple and gold, the black and gold, the vermilion and white, if you don't think the game coming up November 9 is a big deal, let me bend your ear a different way and share a perspective that I had very early this morning. My brother and I spent the weekend, won't say where, but in South Louisiana, had a lot of fun. Bow hunting for deer, went out fishing, a lot of fun. But it did mean we had to get up awfully early this morning and come back to our jobs and civilization. And so what I will tell you, and Clinton, you know about how much I appreciate country music. From 0 to 100, that number would be?
That'd be about like a -5.
Yeah, it's definitely around 0. I don't go negative on stuff like that. But it's a 0 for sure. And yet my brother just basically lives off of it. And so we're on Sirius XM radio, and the guy won't take it off of, what is it, Willie's Roadhouse, Willie Nelson's channel?
Yeah, I think that's the one.
So it's bad enough that I'm going through this prior to 6 o'clock in the morning as we're getting out, going to the front gate to unlock it. Dude, this is a Sirius XM national country music station, and the talk show host, prior to 6 a.m. on a Monday, 2 weeks before the game, is talking about LSU Bama. Are you kidding me?
That's awesome.
That guy was talking about LSU Bama before playing like the next freaking Waylon Jennings song. Dude, it's going to be everywhere. You're not going to be able to avoid it. We're not going to try to avoid it. Now, we will slow build. We're not going to go full on Willie's Roadhouse. Those people are frothing at the mouth. 5:48 a.m. Monday, 2 weeks out. We'll slow build. But we got the matchup we all wanted. And I think the Tigers go in with as much confidence as they've had in this game since 2015, but with a more realistic shot of actually winning the thing. Just putting that early bug in your ear. And oh, for what it's worth, wonder if the folks at Willie's Roadhouse know this. FanDuel Sportsbook CD has put out an early line on this game. I'm curious if you've seen this yet, because if not, give me a yes or a no.
Yeah, I believe it's, 14.5?
Oh, God, no.
Okay.
No.
Okay, that might have been an older one that I saw.
No, my friend. Okay. You got to look at the ones that have the year 2019 on them.
All right, go ahead.
Bama, 6.5 is the one that I've seen right now. FanDuel Sportsbook. To which I say, it's all good. That's fine. In fact, the number one thing for LSU, feels a little weird to me. They deserve it. But I like that whole chip on the shoulder thing. So for Frank and some of our other loyal listeners that were feeling gypped after last week that LSU wasn't number one, all right, you got what you wanted. LSU is the top team in the country via the AP poll. And it's one of the closest races that we've ever seen between 1 and 2. And I think it's going to be one of the closest games that we've had between these two in a long time, certainly since November of 2011. And while we aren't going to get a 9-6 game, and I can almost guarantee you that here in about 12 days, I'm not sure we're going to get quite the shootout that we thought maybe a month ago. Again, I'll slow build into that topic for the next fortnight, but I wanted to plant that seed early. We got a great show coming at you today with plenty of great guests. It's Monday. You know what that means. We'll review the Saints' latest win. This one Breeze played in, and he looked A-OK with that thumb. So we can take a sigh of relief and talk with Gus Kattengill at 4:30. At 5:15, Ruffin Rodrigue of Rufino's on the River. And at straight up 6 o'clock, James Buehr's four games that stood out to us from last week. And for the second time in less than a month, we'll be talking about Ryan Antoine's Westgate Tigers in the driver's seat in District 5-4A, and I think a force to be reckoned with in those Class 4A playoffs. So James Buehr's talking prep football at 6. We're out of here at 6:30 to send you to Monday Night Football. Like I said, it's a big show. And after a brief timeout, we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Whether he's sinking or swimming, Ben Love is just the guy to lead you in the right direction as you make your way back home from work. Now, back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
Saints 2 of 3 in the red zone today. Second down and goal from the 5. Breeze with an empty backfield. 3 receivers left, 2 to his right. 5-man rush, quick throw from Breeze. Goal line, touchdown, Taysom Hill. The Swiss Army knife strikes again, this time from the slot, and the Saints take a 23-9 lead.
That's your boy, CD. Taysom Hill, now with more touchdown receptions on the season than Zach Ertz, prolific tight end for the Philadelphia Eagles, Juju Smith-Schuster, prolific wide receiver for the Pittsburgh Steelers, and some guy named Odell Beckham Jr. You heard me right. Taysom Hill has more TD receptions than those three guys. Wow. And so what the Saints continue to do, it's incredible. And the way they just continue to pass the baton, one quarterback to the next, then, you know, back to the OG, that's pretty amazing too. Breeze, 373 yards, 3 passing touchdowns to only 1 interception. Certainly the thumb looked right. And I'm not going to issue an apology, nor should anybody who on this program or elsewhere doubted whether or not Breeze should have played this week. It was never about his capability. I think everybody who is familiar with the Saints knows what number 9 can do when he's right. It was just about the potential risk factor. And if this was the right time to reintroduce that thumb into the wild. Well, he got past it. The Saints are through to the bye week. Teddy Bridgewater was literally a saint with what he did transitioning this team back to Breeze. And here we go. Saints are 7-1 at the bye. I'm not sure even the most optimistic of Houdat Nation really had this one in the cards, because this was the tougher half of the season. 7-1. And as we just told you, LSU, the number one team in the country, 8-0. And so that leads us to a revisited sink or swim question. But when you live day to day like we do in B2BS, I think that's a good way to play it.
Exciting and new.
Hey, let's call it what it is. Technically, it's a slightly revamped oldie but goodie from a couple of months ago. Better chance to win it all, LSU or the Saints? We asked you this question, I believe, in August. But the question then was better chance, Saints winning it all, LSU getting to the college football playoff. So we'll just go ahead and say it's for the whole enchilada on either side. Both are arguably at or near the top right now of the classifications where they play. Both have been, I think, having to deal with obstacles, as any team will, during a long football season. For the Saints, it's been the injuries first to Breeze, now to Kamara. For LSU, it's been defensive struggles that at times were mind-blowing to many that have followed this team. But here we go. Everything's in front of both of them still, and I want your take. Better chance to win it all. Purple and gold or black and gold? 706-0111. Clint, anxious to see which way you go here.
I'm going to go with the New Orleans Saints winning it all, and I think a lot of it has to do with just how complete this team is. I have not seen a complete Saints team like we've seen, especially the last few weeks. Without Teddy Bridgewater, we've seen this team become more of a cohesive unit. It's not all reliant on Drew Brees or Alvin Kamara. It's that next man up mentality. It's been put to the utmost test over the last few weeks. I think that the Saints have every chance to win the Super Bowl because, to me, there's only two teams that really stand in their way right here, right now. It's the 49ers, and it's probably to be the New England Patriots when it's all said and done to be in Miami. Those are only two teams that are standing in your way of winning the whole darn thing,
you
and I have every chance to do so.
Must not be watching Green Bay Packers, but okay.
Eh.
All right, just checking.
Call me when it's December.
Okay. All right, just saying. They're pretty good, too. They got the same record as the Saints after winning last night at Arrowhead. This one's tough because here's the thing. For me, the Saints deserve all the credit in the world because to do what Clint just said, it's so much more difficult than we all imagine. The next man up thing, if it were that easy, all these crappy teams in the NFL would do it. But you have to have stability as an all-around team. You have to have a support system with your offensive line, your targets in the backfield, your targets out on the perimeter, your defense, your special teams. The Saints have been excellent everywhere. That's what allows this whole next man up, even though they're not the same caliber of man on the field. That's what's allowing this whole thing to work. And yet I'm going to tell you that the answer is LSU. Because there's one thing that I didn't discuss in the open. Sure, LSU beat Auburn. That's a really big deal. LSU's got a chance to beat Bama. That would be a huge deal. You notice something else that happened fairly early on Saturday? The number five team in the country lost. Boomer Sooner down. And what does that mean? Two SEC teams are getting in. You don't have to like it, everybody else. Just accept it. And so what I'm telling you is, I think LSU, Alabama, Florida, and Georgia are going to find a way to put two out of those four into the big dance. And I think two of them could absolutely come from the SEC West. Just kind of store that away. I think LSU's chances improve greatly with that Oklahoma result. And so I think the way LSU's playing, the fact that they've been relatively healthy, the slip up from Boomer Sooner, I think I'm going to answer LSU at this point. Let's go take your temperature. Getting out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Frank, welcome to the show. Which way are you leaning?
Yes.
Yeah, right.
That's the best I can do, Ben. I cannot bend in either direction. You kind of stole my thunder right there with the Boomer Sooner thing. SEC West, man, I don't know how you could slice this apple. Saints are playing great ball. You did mention Green Bay. I think Green Bay is going to slip up simply because Breeze has a lot more tread on the tires than Rodgers does. But what can you say about this Saints defense? I mean, they didn't give up a touchdown. And, you know, the Cardinals had a three-game winning streak coming into the game, and they just looked abysmal. I mean, that little running back they put in at the end of the game after, I think it was Edmonds or Edwards, got hurt. I mean, he didn't know his butt from a hole in the ground.
It's an analogy I hadn't heard in a while, but it's also appropriate. Saints defense doing some just despicably dominant things. And if you take out some garbage time points, yardage from Seattle, it really is almost borderline, I mean, top of the league type stuff when you take about a five-game sample. And, Frank, a lot like what we're seeing on the offense, making good for first Breeze and Kamara being out, this defense, the special teams, they're doing their part as well.
And this rookie, what's his name, Curtis Johnson or Gardner Johnson?
C.J. Gardner Johnson is playing lights out lately.
He's killing it, bro. I don't know where they got this guy from. But I'm glad they got him because, my goodness, I mean, he's challenging Williams for the job. I thought he had a phenomenal game.
A fairly large and reputable university called Florida is where they found him.
Oh, okay. I may have heard of it once or twice. The only drawback that I have on the Saints game is that the officiating, not so much the you know, penalties or whatnot. I thought the ball placement was atrocious. Did you catch that?
Not to the same extent. I got to move it along. But, Frank, officials are going to officiate, and you know what that means. I didn't mean that in a positive way. Quickly, let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Halftime, thanks for the patience. You going LSU or you going Saints?
I'm going to go Saints, and here's the reason why. I really do think LSU will win it this year. But when you want to say a chance, the reason why I'm going more with the Saints, because it's very possible. I mean, if they beat San Francisco, I mean, even though they could be the number two seed, the Saints, one or two seeds, that means the Super Bowl has to go through New Orleans. We know that's it's easier for them to get to the Super Bowl, and I think once they get there, they can win. The reason why I have a problem with LSU, because of the way it's set right now, either is a chance for if they beat Alabama, they'll face Alabama again. They beat Alabama. Not only will they face Alabama again, playoff time possible, they go to the SEC championship, they probably might face Florida again. So it's to me, it's a little tougher for LSU, I think, just because of the possibility of facing Alabama and LSU and Florida again than it is for the Saints. That's the only edge that I'm giving to the Saints.
Same team twice. I get it. Halftime, I appreciate it. We got to head toward a break. This one can live on, though. We got some time at the end of this hour. We'll carve out for you. Better chance to win it all. Now that you know what you know. Now that we're just about done with October. Is it LSU or the Saints? Continue to marinate. And we'll get some expert analysis on who that nation when we return. Gus Katengill in his normal Monday 4 o'clock hour spot. Excited to take a visit to the Big Easy. And after a brief timeout, that's exactly what we'll do with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
One of them is famous in Cajun country. The other has a set of pipes that never quits. Seriously, we've tried before. Together, Ben and Clint bring you home on 103.7 The Game.
Back in with the same flow. Again, we won't change it, keeping it superstitious and keeping it in the win column are the Saints. To talk about all things who dat black and gold, let's get out to the Artco Equipment Hotline. He is the host of the Sports Hangover, ESPN 100.3 in the Big Easy. It's Gus Katengill. How are you, Gus?
Good, man. How you doing, man?
I'm going to lead off with a guy. I'm good, by the way. Going to lead off with a guy who was a bit of an afterthought, I feel like, in August. And suddenly C.J. Gardner-Johnson is playing some real big boy football. I guess, what have you seen from him?
Funny, because the only way to be an afterthought is if he wouldn't be at practice or you weren't covering him in rookie minicamp. Because, to me, he was absolutely one of those stories. I remember in rookie minicamp, so the draft happens and that weekend that you can get out there. And for the first time in a while, it had been a couple of years, we hadn't gotten a chance to really kind of see that Saturday practice out of the three. And Ben, all he did was get an interception and then hit the ball that led to an interception by the other rookie safety. And you're sitting there going, who of this dude? You just see it. He stood out and looked like the best player on that field. Now, remember, it was just all rookies or free agent tryout guys. After that practice, Aaron Glenn, the defensive backs coach, said that he got a pick on Friday and that he was a player that you're going to have to find a way to get him on the field because you can do anything with him. Safety, nickel corner, slot be on the outside, you name it. He was that versatile. And so we kind of, from that point on, kept our eye out on him. And then as camp came on, you just started seeing more and more OTAs. You saw him making some plays. Training camp came, you didn't see him nearly as much as a lot of, I guess, that stuff starts piling on, Ben, as you would expect with the rookie. But if you've looked at the snaps and you've looked at how he's been used since the beginning of the season, I'm going to take you back just a few weeks ago, Dallas. Do you remember Dennis Allen blitzed on that Hail Mary in which Dak Prescott threw the ball, and you saw who he sent on the blitz? It was Chauncey Gardner-Johnson, and he hit him right in the chest and hit him late with the penalty. I mean, that's kind of a big thing to me. If you trust that rookie to come in, you're not asking him to just go out there and try to knock the ball down. You're sending him in on the blitz to try to make a play. And look, I mean, that's one of those things that if he hits him wrong, that's a penalty. So that said a lot to me. I remember talking about that on the Monday after that show because that showed trust a lot. But, dude, he's strong, he hits hard, and he's just technically sound. When we would watch him at practice, he covers you like a gnat, but he doesn't have to touch you. You see a lot of these DBs that cling and grab on you every now and then to try to make sure he can stay next to you. His athletic ability allows you to do that. And so I wasn't surprised at all. If anything, I was joking last week when he got in. I'm like, dude, he's that. Sorry, PJ, because this is an opportunity. And you saw yesterday, dude, 48 of 49 possible snaps he was on the field.
Incredible. Gus, with Breeze, I think we all watch and understand that he's healthy, he's back, he's right. But why do you think, I guess from listening to interviews and being around that place, why do you think it was so important for them to bring him back in that game?
It's because that's what he wanted more than anything. And for starters, look, we weren't told anything, and they kept that on the wraps as best as I've ever seen or heard, right? I mean, if he was healthy and he's 100% and he's not experiencing any issues with the thumb, of course he'd play him. And, you know, fortunately, the broadcast yesterday, they got a little better info than we did when they got the sit-down, but they said on Monday they had that workout, and he had to prove it to Sean that he could do it. And let's see what happens at practice on Wednesday, and he was fine. And look, Wednesday, Drew Brees is saying that it's not about a pain thing. It's not a swelling thing. It's about the comfortableness of being able to throw the football. You watched that yesterday. I mean, you know, he's a mutant. I mean, you couldn't have told at all that he had anything taped to his thumb or nothing. You didn't see wounded ducks. You didn't see the ball laid. And it's incredible. But, look, he said it after the game. He wanted to be back before the bye, not just because of, you know, trying to knock out. There's no rust. That's what I said to everybody. I'm like, it won't be rust. You didn't see rust yesterday. You saw a guy that was ready to go. There's no rust with that guy. What I think he wanted was what he said after the game. Team needed him. You know, they're playing for a one seed. They're playing to host. They're playing to get back to the point where they were last year, where you got to come to New Orleans to get to the Super Bowl. That's what they're playing for. And right now, there's a couple of teams that are in that neighborhood. So, look, I love what Teddy did, what the rest of the team did, stand up and you know, take that next step and pick up the slack because it was a team effort. But you saw yesterday what having a Hall of Famer does. 9 different receivers touch the ball at least once. The ball gets spread everywhere. Tight ends become pass catchers all of a sudden. You know, all of those different things. So that's why he had to come.
Talking Saints football with Gus Kattengill on 103.7 The Game. Is Latavius Murray proving that once Kamara comes back, it needs to be handled a little differently in the backfield, or is he really just a stopgap?
No, look, I think you can use him as a 1-2 punch. And look, you go back to what you saw in training camp. There's 2 things that we've seen yesterday, and just really the last 2 weeks, that you go to camp practices, if you go to OTAs, you saw it. We saw Latavius Murray being thrown the football a lot. I remember writing down in my notes and coming in doing the show going, I'm surprised by 2 things from 28. He's big. I mean, like, he has size, man. He's not a small back. Secondly, they throw to him a lot out of the backfield, crossing routes, they wheel routes, and he has some speed on him. And I remember laughing with my intern on one practice. I'm like, who's knocking him down, one person, if he gets ahead of steam on a wheel route? So I expected it. You just didn't see it. And it was crazy, man, because, look, you're not alone. A lot of people in the first few weeks, like Cook, he's a bust. Murray's a bust. I'm like, you got to call the plays for him. I mean, there were 3 games, out of the first 3 games, Jared Cook, other than the Rams game, had 2 targets and 3 targets in week 3. And he caught 2 of them. So unless you throw it to him, same thing with Murray. You have to call a play for him. He's had 30-plus touches, 2 straight games, and he's shown you that he can do a little bit of both. Look, I think, if anything, maybe it does build trust into Sean that maybe he can call more plays. He can do that, and I just think it's more about the flow of the offense. It's more about the flow of what they need to do that makes sense to me for it to happen.
Gus, take a look around the NFC with me, and we'll take the Saints out of the equation here. Best team in the conference, is it the 49ers or the Packers?
You know, here's the thing. Watching that game last night, and I have been, Ben, trying to be like, look, I don't buy Green Bay. Could have lost to Detroit. I'm not scared of that defense, really, you know, and okay, you know, Jimmy Graham cracker might catch a pass here and there, but are you really fearful of their offense? It's Rodgers that's making plays, you know? I mean, like that touchdown pass in the back corner yesterday. I mean, that was a ridiculous play in a throw. But I watched that game last night. I get they didn't have Mahomes, but I thought Andy Reid caught a fantastic game from Matt Moore. They were using all kinds of different plays, and they were going back and forth. And look, you got to go to KC and win. That's a big the big thing for them. So, look, they're legit. They're a playoff team, absolutely. I know the broadcasters are sitting there going, they're a championship contending team. Here's why, again, Breeze line to get back. Hosting Green Bay and going to Green Bay in January are two completely different things, right? So that's why now it's important. So it is something that I would put them slightly above San Fran on that. I still think they're not as tested just yet. You got to show me that Jimmy G can be a guy that is going to be able to give me, you know, Garoppolo can give me some of those things that you're seeing in the regular season into the postseason. And but that said, Kyle Shanahan's offense, man, got Atlanta in the Super Bowl, and that looks like a completely different team since he's left. So they got a good defense. They have a lot of draft picks that they've stockpiled and gotten over the last couple of weeks. So, look, those are the top three teams. What I will get the Saints and put them first in, not because I'm a homer, it's just the competition they've played. And you take away Rodgers, you take away Garoppolo, are they the same team? Do they win as many games? I don't know if that's the case. The Saints were taken away with from Drew Brees, and they didn't lose. So because of that, I'm with, you know, Tony Dungy last night. Saints are the best team in the NFL to me.
All right, Gus, before we let you go, Pelicans are 0-3, so see you next season, mm-hmm. right?
No, not at all. I mean, I'm actually here at the arena getting ready to do the pregame show at 6. Look, I it's crazy. I think if you don't watch the games and you only see the stat and the records, you're sitting there and going, okay, look, there you go. So they're not good. I would argue a handful of things. I'll do it very quickly. They are still trying to figure out who's who and what's what. Drew Holiday, you have to play like Drew Holiday. And they've been in all three games, just couldn't close out at Toronto in overtime, lost by 3 on the floor at Houston, a team that has 2 MVPs. James Harden had more free throws than the Pelicans did. There's a stat we're going to talk about in our pregame today where they've lost by a combined 18 points, but the number of free throw points that they've given up is something like 38 or something. So that's a huge difference. They just haven't closed games out. They've been there. And, Ben, you'd agree with me on this. There's a difference in not having the talent to where you can even be in those games late, and there's a difference in not being able to close it out.
No question.
I can understand not being able to close it out. This is the third game that they've had, fourth game tonight, where that roster's even been on the floor together. I mean, this isn't AD and Drew and company adding a piece or two. It's Drew and adding a whole new team around there. So he's going to play better. The rest of the pieces are filling. Look, Ingram's looked fantastic. The ball had 10 assists in that game against Houston. And again, James Harden had more free throws than the Pels team. The Pels are getting outshot right now on the free throw line, and you've lost it by a combined 18 points. So weather the storm. If you look at the schedule with Zion, with a playoff team, those first 10-11 games are going to be tough. So get through these first 10-11 games, learn as much as you can about your team, and I would not be surprised if we get into the spring and this team is playing some really good basketball. Because, again, you've been in three games. You had a chance to win them. You haven't closed them. And that's with a group of guys that have not played together.
Just dialed in on everything New Orleans sports. Gus, thanks as always. Enjoy the ball game tonight in the Blender.
It's always a pleasure, man. Take care.
You too. And for what it's worth, Pelicans hosting the Warriors tonight. Two teams combined, 0-5. What a world we live in. And the Pels favored by 4.5. We got to throw it to our final break of the hour. We'll get back to the sink or swim question of the day. Better chance to win it all, LSU or the Saints, and a few other things on LSU football that I'll add to the discussion. So after a brief timeout, we'll be right back at it with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
Gridiron debates never go out of style on Bumper to Bumper Sports, but feel free to be right anytime you're ready to start on 103.7 The Game.
Third down and 3. Tigers trying to spread the field. Snap back to Joe. Looking left, design run. Quarterback draw up the middle. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Touchdown, Tigers!
Just a great call from CB there. Enjoyed that. Not to be confused with CD. He's Clint. He's with me. That would be Chris Blair. Count down those yards, brother. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. No, it didn't take Burbank Joe that long to finish off the final 5 yards of his touchdown run that made it 23-13. But that was a great call. Big point in the ball game. Burrow, Clint, CD, breaking backs with his arm and his legs these days.
It was absolutely fantastic to see what he did all the way around. Just wish there was a few more points on the board, because, I mean, you just look up and down like the stat sheet, it looked like that game should have been a lot more high scoring.
I promise to our listeners we didn't discuss the comments that Clint was just making before this segment. I promise that was not in the show prep today. But thank the big guy upstairs that you just put it on a tee for me. It's exactly what I wanted to get into, because I couldn't disagree anymore with you. Could not disagree anymore with you.
Okay.
And I'm going to tell you why. I'll invite some calls as well. 706-0111. We'll also let you answer the sink or swim question of the day. Now that you've had 8 weeks to marinate and learn a little bit about LSU and the Saints, which do you feel has the better chance to win it all? LSU winning the college football playoffs or the Saints winning the Lombardi Trophy? Call us. Let us know. 706-0111. Again, the number to play. I've heard a lot of whining and moaning about LSU's total yardage, the relatively close in proximity score. I've even heard a whole lot of, man, we kind of had to win that one less style. No, you bleeping did not. Less teams didn't have special teams that went against them as decidedly as LSU's did on Saturday. Typically, less LSU teams were often very good, sometimes lethal and opportunistic on defense, good running the football on offense, and had a hard time with the imagination offensively. Had a hard time closing people out. And maybe that's the only comparison you could draw. LSU didn't completely put its boot on Auburn's throat when it had it down after that Burrow score, 23-13. I get it that, oh, Ensminger and Brady went ever so slightly conservative. I get it after taking that 10-point lead. But there are a couple of big differences I would point out between the majority of the less era and what we saw Saturday. First and foremost, LSU has the better quarterback. How many times was that the case under the less teams? Very seldom. When you have good defense, the other team has good defense. When you've got great skill position players, and it's the SEC West, both LSU and Auburn perennially are in the top 10 to 12 of the national recruiting rankings. They've all got dudes. LSU's got one at quarterback. And I think Auburn might for the future as well. But Bo Nix was in a telephone booth for most of that game. He had no chance. And credit the coverage from LSU secondary in leading to that. Even in great coverage, under a lot of duress, Burrow took what was given to him, advanced it enough, and opened things up for Clyde Edwards-Helaire. LSU won that game because it had the better quarterback. Yes, the defense deserves a lot of credit as well. LSU's defense stood up and played as well over 4 quarters as I thought they did over the final quarter and a half, let's say, against Florida to close out that win. LSU's defense deserves a heaping bunch of credit. And even when it wasn't going right, it kind of went right. Case in point, the long run. First drive of the second half for Auburn. Should have been a touchdown. Nothing but green grass ahead of him. And the Auburn freshman running back, maybe seeing Grant Delpit creeping on him out of the corner of his eye, steps out at the 9-yard line. Auburn kicked a field goal on that drive. That was the difference in the ball game right there. So LSU's defense did enough and then some in this game. They deserve credit. But the real reason LSU won this one, it had the better quarterback. And so while I get Clint and anybody else, YP, you people out there in listener land, you want to say this is less all over and we had to win one this way. Okay, it happened once in 8 games. I think you'll deal and move on. LSU ran away from Florida because of its offense. LSU ran away eventually from Texas because of its offense. And they had the better quarterback inside of Death Valley. That hasn't been the case in a while, where LSU, one, has the better quarterback, and two, the staff trusts him. It's amazing what that trust will enable. And if you doubt what happens when the trust breaks, look at what's happening in Athens, Georgia right now. The trust in Fromm to go out there and win games for Georgia is fairly low. They lose to South Carolina. They play a scoreless into the late third quarter game against Kentucky. That Georgia team's not exactly right. And here we are. LSU finally won a game where it had to be played in tight quarters. And I suggested to you that that time would come. That's why I was worried about the defense after Texas and especially after Vanderbilt. But that group has gotten healthier, as many of you thought that they might. That group has played more cohesively. And LSU's defense is now a factor in why they're winning games. Florida, Auburn, those are two of your top three wins that you have eight contests into the season. But the difference maker is number nine. And yeah, he threw for more yards and ran for a touchdown, and you feel like LSU should have had more points on the board. They had more points than the other team, and they probably could have done a little more with that last drive. So I'll hear you that it was conservative late, but still, I think LSU by and large did everything that you could have asked for in a game that was closer than many of us probably expected. Just thinking out loud. All right, quickly, let's get to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Dusty, you got about 40 seconds. Is it LSU or the Saints with a better chance to win it all?
I say the Saints, man. We only got really two tough competitions left, and that's against the 49ers and Christian McCaffrey on the Panthers. That's about it. And I believe the 49ers way overrated. They've been playing jokes basically all year to get to their undefeated score.
Fair enough. Dusty, I appreciate it.
All right, brother.
Our man's in, and he's got a take that's on the board. I don't know if it'll stand the test of time, though, because the 49ers did beat those Panthers 51-13 yesterday. 49ers are pretty darn good. Panthers, on the other hand, boy, we'll see what happens when Cam Newton is back and healthy. Pretty good show so far. Let's wind down our opening hour with one final word.
What's up, Acadiana? I'm Gabe Broussard from Strange Theories and Season 11 of The Voice. It's almost 5 o'clock. Now it's time for the final word of the hour, and it's presented to you by me and my family at the Village Station. We are your final stop to fill up your stomach and your tank when you're heading home on Maurice Avenue. Now, here's Ben. His voice is pretty nice, but I don't think he could ever make two chairs turn.
Mistaken. Hey, I told you Friday, I thought the best chance for the SEC to get two teams in the college football playoff, the Big Ten cannibalizing itself. That could happen, but it didn't on Saturday. Penn State won. Ohio State won. It's the Big 12 that fell on the sword. That Oklahoma loss needs to echo a little more on this show and more loudly than it has so far. I'll see to it that happens in our 5 o'clock hour. Mistaken is the final word of this hour, and it's brought to you by the Village Station. We're coming right back in. Ruff and Rodrigue in about 15 minutes. Don't go anywhere. We've got more Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
We are off and running. Hour two of three underway. You're listening to a Monday edition of Bumper to Bumper Sports live on 1037 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. LSU 8-0 after a 23-20 win over Auburn. Wasn't the type of authoritative win anybody was hoping for or expecting, but it might just make this Tigers team even more battle-tested as they head toward a date with undefeated Alabama. The Saints, now 7-1, heading into the bye week. Breeze returns 373 yards through the air. Both the Tigers and the Saints soaring right now through October and into November. And that got us thinking about titles. Well, it hadn't happened in 10 years, right? For the Saints, hasn't happened in longer than that. For LSU, so it's only right that we start to let the mind wander a little bit. And we asked you in the 4 o'clock hour, now that you know what you know, which team has the better chance of winning it all? Is it LSU or the Saints? We've gotten great response so far. We're going to take another. Let's get out to the Ardco Equipment Hotline. Bo, help us kick off this 5 o'clock hour. Which way are you leaning?
Hey, how you doing? Look, I like the question, but we all know the answer. Hopefully we can pull the double off. I don't know if that's ever happened. Had a college football team and a pro football team in the same year. But It's an obvious answer because the Saints have one of the best defense, if not the best defense in the league, and one of the best offenses. And we have some electricity going on the special team. So I like the question. It's fun to talk about, but if you're watching football, the Saints are locked down the best top 53 man from top to bottom. And LSU's got a really nice offense and nice pieces on defense. We need to clean up the special teams. But we can hope for LSU. We got a real good shot to win it all. But I think it's hands down Saints taking it all.
It's a good argument, Bo.
Just want to put that out there. Y'all enjoy the rest of the afternoon. And tell Russell Rodriguez that Boo Burness said hello.
There we go. We could do that. We'll have him aboard. The guy knows the program. Ruff will be with us in about 10 minutes. Bo says it's the Saints. If you're watching football, it should be obvious. Well, I understand his point. The defense and the offense both toward the top of the game. Special teams, there's no question. At least the guys with the feet, Lutz, Morstead, those guys are elite. Maybe the best combo in the league. Don't like the Saints' consistency in the return game at this point, especially on punt returns. Kickoff returns are almost going the way of the dodo bird. They're basically extinct, but punt returns are a little too much of a high-risk, high-reward adventure. Sometimes that gets you an early X in the playoffs, but I don't sense that's going to happen to these Saints. I think they've got every opportunity to host a divisional round playoff game, and if things fall right, might be hosting the NFC title game as well. So I understand that side of the argument. I just won't discount LSU side, because sometimes we look at it as, okay, here's their offense, here's their defense, where do they rank on both? College football is a little bit different, only from this standpoint. There's that opportunity to play a team twice, and I know that exists in the NFL as well, right? They could get Clint, San Fran, I get that. They can get them twice. But there's a chance to play cat and mouse with this Bama game. Now, you want to go out and win the damn thing. There's no question. And I think LSU's in a position where they could actually do that. Will they? Don't know. Early Vegas line is about 6.5. Bama's favorite. What happens with Tua's ankle? We'll all find out the answers to all those questions. We got a week and 5 days to build this thing up. LSU could lose at Bama, still get into the playoffs and play Bama again. LSU could beat Bama, get into the playoffs, and still play Bama again. There are a lot of ways that this cookie can crumble. But right now, as I told you at the end of the 4 o'clock hour, I'm a pretty big proponent of team with the best quarterback wins. All other things equal. And so many times in major college football, all other things are kind of equal. You're going to say, Bo, and anybody else that thought it, I'm not picking on Bo, but you're going to say what you do about LSU's defense there. Some nice pieces, but maybe they're not elite. They haven't proven this year they are what they've been in years past. I could say the exact same thing about Alabama. And it doesn't matter if injuries are the culprit, it's the reality. Hate to go full Patino on everybody, but it's just, it's a fact at this point. Dylan Moses isn't walking through that door. Their top two linebackers aren't walking through that door. Their quarterback may limp through that door. Does it mean LSU's going to win because of all those things? No, they're not guaranteed anything, and they know that. But there's confidence on the LSU side, and I think there's some justified confidence. 2016, interim year under Ogeron, offense was going well. They wanted to believe it, and people kept telling me Danny Etling's a good quarterback. Yeah, he's a pretty good quarterback. Joe Burrow might be the best LSU's ever had. And the defense is starting to come to the party. So are there more cracks in the armor for LSU and the Saints? Potentially so. And I get that argument from Bo. I just wouldn't dead and bury the purple and gold in this discussion.
You can't bury the purple and gold in this conversation at all. It just feels like to me, and probably to Bo as well, and a lot of other people, it's going to be the New Orleans Saints. I feel like, you know, he brought it up perfectly. The defense is one of the best he's seen in a long time in the NFL. I think they're one of the best defenses. But one part I think we are definitely kind of glossing over is the fact that the offensive line for the Saints seemingly has not missed a beat at all this year. We talked about it all preseason long, all offseason, was who's going to fill the void that Max Unger left. And I think Eric McCoy has definitely proven himself to be the real McCoy.
Well done. You know what's funny about that, though? We wondered aloud if it wouldn't be some of the younger guns that, if it's not McCoy, would it be Clapp, right? What's ironic and funny is that Clapp is playing a decent amount now on these 6-0 line sets, right? These unbalanced sets, especially in life with Latavius Murray back there.
Yep.
And I love it. I mean, I just freaking love it. The only thing that pleases me more about the Saints offense is throwing red zone touchdowns to Taysom Hill. But both of those things are just splendidly Sean Payton. That's how I'll put that. They're both phenomenally Sean Payton.
Much like end arounds?
Oh, now you just pissed me off a little bit. I was feeling good about everything, but I love getting Taysom Hill involved inside the red zone as a pass-catching threat. Bringing in that 6-0 lineman, Will Clapp leading around. They're just clicking on all cylinders. And yes, they've played good, if not great, defenses in the stretch since Breeze was originally hurt. They've got a chance to really make headway after this bye week. I could, and I will, say the exact same thing about LSU. So it's an exciting time to be rooting on both of these teams. A lot of good answers to the question that we have so far. Better chance to win it all now that you know what you know. Is it LSU or the Saints? Good call from Bo in this hour. We took three on that subject in the last hour. We'll keep those going. We've got it up as well. If you want to respond on social media, at 1037 The Game on Facebook and Twitter. As far as our program, we got to take a brief time out. When we return, Ruffin Rodrigue joins us. We'll tell him Bo said, que pasa, amigo. We'll be right back in after this timeout with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You say tomato, I say tomato. The famous Clint D says something that none of us will agree with. Back to more top shelf analysis for your drive home. It's Bumper to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
And right back to discussing the number one team in the country, at least in the AP poll, the LSU Tigers. Had a 23-20 win over Auburn, and in less than 2 weeks, they'll take a much-anticipated trip to Tuscaloosa. Let's discuss that and more with Ruffin Rodrigue, owner of Rufino's on the River. Ruffin, how you feeling today?
Feeling great, man. Had a great weekend, obviously, with the Tigers coming through against Auburn in a classic showdown, and that just turned out to be a nice day, and pretty cool today. I got to meet for the first time Michael Thomas, which I spent an hour with him. Well, man, what a fantastic human. I mean, if you're not a Michael Thomas fan, you need to be, because off the field, he is spectacular. What a great, great kid.
I do want to go down the well with LSU, but look, I can't take that type of lead and not run with it. Give me a little more. How'd you come into contact with number 13?
He's a good guy. We have mutual friends, and I was in New Orleans for you know me, big rap star fan. I was in with the Voodoo Fest last night. My buddy Steve Rahe, former teammates, part of that. And we went to backstage with this Post Malone, this musician from Dallas. And then today, on the way back, Michael needed a ride to Houston, and I had some connections with some drivers and stuff. So just got to spend about an hour with him, man. Class. I mean, just wow. He's good friends, but I knew it right off the bat because, you know, I told him I was friends with Jarvis Landry and Odell Beckham, and I said, "Man, you remind me of Jarvis." And he said, "Jarvis is my boy. He and Jarvis Landry are really, really tight," which I knew. I didn't have to tell me. I just knew from his personality and Jarvis, they would be long lost brothers. Just great, great kids.
Man, between that story and Post Malone, I feel like I want to go down a different path, but I'll take it to LSU Auburn. I know you were there as well. What does it say about LSU, especially on defense, that they played a game finally in kind of tight quarters, rough, and they got it done?
Yeah, that was the thing is we didn't play a perfect game. You muff a punt. You make a lot of mistakes, a lot of penalties that we had done all year. And you defensively, you play the best game of the season, and you against a big-time team. And you know, when you look at the penalties and stuff from different sides, you know, Auburn's going to say they had, so many penalties. Well, you know, the other side forces a lot of those penalties. And there's a lot not called. I mean, the hit on Joe Burrow on the sideline, for that not to be reviewed, you know, it's crazy. You know, you're supposed to protect the quarterback, and they're doing the big hit. But he bounced right up, and he was fine. And a couple of low ball hits to his knees and all that stuff. But, hey, look, it was a great contest. LSU did not play their best offensively. Muffed a punt, which is you cannot do that in the SEC. But he's learned. He's a freshman, and he comes back and he gets the big interception. So, you know, this team is number one for one reason only. We played the toughest schedule for all the highly ranked teams that are undefeated, and we deserve it. Alabama hadn't played anybody. We don't know how good Alabama is. Arkansas is terrible, Ben. I mean, I have friends on the Arkansas side, and they're just embarrassed. I mean, they are really embarrassed with the former coach left him in. So they, you know, you saw what Alabama did to them, and, you know, we'll see in 2 weeks, man. They are talented. Nobody knows about Tua. It's a 2:30 game. It's gonna be so much speculation the next 2 weeks. I think we're all going to be tired, but we just needed to get here.
Yeah, it was kind of the case last year. That game started at least 4 or 5 hours too late, considering how pumped up O and company were. All right, Ruffin, before we dive back into it, the latest at Ruffino's on the river. I know you've been all over the place in South Louisiana, but it's nice to come home to Lafayette, and especially go to that place.
Oh, yeah, man. I was there. I couldn't get it this weekend because there's so much going on this side. But I'll be there a few nights this week. Got a lot of stuff going on. It's just, man, it's just this time of year with the weather, with the view. The perfect, absolute perfect time to go. And I tell you, Ben, you know the fun part about Ruffino's and the River? You know, the Baton Rouge Ruffino is known for, you know, you can go there any night and see a Michael Thomas or a celebrity, or not even if it's a sports celebrity, it could be a Hollywood celebrity or something. You know, people will notice and recognize it. People like that kind of stuff. I can tell you, Lafayette is like the hidden jewel for that, man. They never tell you they're coming. You just show up to Ruffino's on the river, and it could be anybody sitting next to you, you know, because of the culture and the people that love that the area. And lately, we've been having a lot of that. It's been a lot of fun. So I got that this weekend when I was. So many people tell me all the time about the river location and the beauty and the food and the energy and the whole deal. And you know, John Goodman. Saw him at the LSU deal, and first thing he said, "Oh, your Lafayette restaurant is great." I'm like, "John, what do you? I haven't seen you in ages, you know, and you don't tell me you're gone." He just shows up every once in a while, and it's just a lot of fun for him. So, it's a great place, great destination place, and a great place for the people of Acadiana.
And you can get your reservations online, RuffinosLafayette.com. Ruffin, I'm going to put myself in the group of people who sometimes wants the prototypical running back, right? Clyde Edwards-Helaire doesn't fit the build in so many ways, but what else can you say about the kid? That performance Saturday was outstanding.
He is perfect, then, for that offense. You know, he's almost like a Darren Sproles size. I know Bryce Love is a sprinter, but he's got the same size as Bryce Love. He's got moves that just will, I mean, what do you call it? Ankle bully? My son, my 11-year-old son, plays a rap song called Ankle Bully about basketball players that make such extreme moves on guys, and it breaks them down and it breaks their ankles. And that's what happened on Saturday with Clyde, man. He makes you look like an idiot. Do not try to, you know, just don't look at his head or his head. He is going to make you miss. And the real big thing, Ben, is, for running backs in this system especially, being patient, let your blocks take place, let everything fold out, and hit the hole when it's ready to hit. And I think Clyde's finally getting that. And that's why he's getting all these big yards. He's just another great – now, it hurts us on short yardage, obviously, not having a fullback, that's the one tough thing about running this kind of spread, whatever you want to call it, offense. You got to have some kind of push and – a surge, and it's hard to do. Auburn even had a hard time, you know, but that even that quarterback sneak, they had to, I don't know how they called that with the guy pushing him late, but it's, Clyde's a real deal, man. I love him. I love watching him play, and I love watching him make people miss.
LSU Bama Ruffin, I get it. It's, what, 12 days away, but yet I'll only have you on the show today and next week, so I'll get an early take defensively. How do you think that Saban, without his best defense, we understand that, how does he get that group to get after Burrow? How do you think he attacks this LSU offense?
Man, I tell you, you know, Auburn showed a lot of crazy fronts and all that confused the offensive line a little bit. He's going to bring about it. Kevin Steele, I thought, did a great job. Kevin Steele was a great coordinator here, and he's a great guy, and hats off to him for the job he's done at Auburn. That said, you know, Saban's the master, and he's got a lot of young people on his defense, and he hadn't faced an offense even close to what he's going to face. And he knows. He knows they're going to get, those young guys are going to get tested. Man, you know, the thing is the reason why Auburn was somewhat successful was basically because one guy, that number five, is a beast. I don't know who needs a quarterback or who needs whoever in the NFL, but if I have the number one pick, I know who I'm taking. Okay. Number five from Auburn is my guy. He is a strong, crazy beast who's unblockable. And you saw it on Saturday, man. The guy was just, and he pumped, and he really excited that offense. I mean, that defense. And he was hard to do. He blocked passes down. It was just crazy how good he was. So you want to get LSU, you got to get penetration, number one. And I don't know if Alabama has those guys. I think we'll be ready for them. But it's going to be a classic showdown. Teams match up so evenly, Ben. I don't know what the early line is or whatever. I'm sure it's going to be like 1.5, 2 points or whatever.
Oh, man. You don't want to hear then. At least from what I found on FanDuel Sportsbook, Alabama 6.5.
Wow, okay. That's a home cooking. Yeah, that's what you call home cooking. So, yeah, I can see that because it's in Tuscaloosa. And obviously you're going to have the fans on their side. And you're not going to have a whole lot of LSU fans there because of the ticket situations. Alabama always puts it in. Nick does not want to lose to Ed right now because he knows he loses to Ed now, and Ed is kicking his tail in recruiting. This could be a long season for him, so it's gonna be fun, man. I can't wait to watch it. It's gonna, you know, the whole Tua situation, and it's gonna be crazy.
All right, I've carved out 90 seconds for us on the back end, Ruffin. Give me a review on Post Malone.
Man, he is, you know, outside of being him, writing all his own music and lyrics and all that stuff, and all he's come out with like 3 albums in a year and a half, 2 years. Kids and me, he's just laid back, big Dallas Cowboys fan. His dad was a caterer for the Cowboys for years. Knows all the Cowboys, knows Lyle Collins. We had mutual friends with him, and he's a good guy, man. 24 years old, baby face, tattoos all over the place. But man, when he got out there, he owned that crowd. There's nothing better than watching somebody really own the crowd. And I saw it, I think it was 1984, when I went to one of my first concerts. It was Queen in New York, and Freddie Mercury, you know, obviously one of the best ever to own a crowd. And I told him to post after the show. I said, dude, I haven't seen anybody own a crowd like that since Freddie Mercury. I thought he was going to start crying. He said, don't tell me that, man. I said, telling you, man. I was a kid. I saw him. I saw what he did. And I saw what you did to those, you know, 12,000, 15,000 people at Voodoo last night. And, man, it was unbelievable, the passion and the tears and all that that he brought out of those kids. It was great. Really, really fantastic show.
Ruffin, this is great too, man. Really covered the gamut today. Thanks again for the time. Have a great week.
Okay, buddy. Have a good one.
Ruffin Roderick, owner of Ruffino's on the River. Wow. Michael Thomas, Post Malone. I think as Lanyap, we sprinkled in a little LSU football talk there. But I didn't see some of those things coming, but I'm glad we went down those roads. Post Malone, for my money, one of the ugliest human beings that you'll ever see. But his music, the kids love it. They get lit to it. And apparently he owns a crowd like no one since Freddie Mercury. And I had a feeling that we would get this on the way out. And so after a brief timeout, we'll throw shade. And that's appropriate. More Bumper to Bumper Sports. Coming at you on 103.7 The Game.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station, and you're listening to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game, live online at 103.7thegame.com. Follow on Facebook and Twitter now at 103.7 The Game.
Oh, I think we're going to have to cover some new ground, new territory to the program. CD, this is a place that since late May of 2015, you and I have not gone yet. And considering it's a sports talk radio show, maybe that's shame on us. Or maybe it just means typically we stay on topic with sports, relevant topics. But today we're going to blend sports almost reluctantly. We're going to blend sports with a topic that's near and dear to most guys' hearts that are listening. Clint, I didn't share this with you before the program.
Yeah.
You want to take a guess what two things we may be discussing that are near and dear to most sports fans' hearts that are males?
Yeah, definitely has something to do with what happened last night with the Nationals-Astros game.
Boobs.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. We're gonna get to that after 4.5 years of not getting to that. So it's a little bit of B2BS with an anatomy twist here, and that's my segue to remind you that no one throws shade outside your home or business like the pros at Patio Center. Don't believe me? Go to the website, patiocenter.com. You'll fall in love with the retractable shades and screens, the standing seam metal awnings, and the customized patio covers with the cypress accents. And know that you can trust their professional installers inside your home. Collectively, the pros and the team at Patio Center, they're ready to up your patio game. Visit the website to learn more. PatioCenter.com, the kings of customization. It's never one size fits all for the licensed, insured, and bonded professionals at Patio Center.
It's time for Throwing Shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. Nobody throws shade outside your home or business like Patio Center. Visit the website at PatioCenter.com.
Might have to throw a bra or two, but you're right, CD. Game 5 of the World Series, live national television. And yes, on Fox, not one but two pairs of exposed breasts came on the live feed. And I didn't catch it. I did not. I watched a decent portion of that game, even at the hunting camp I was at. We had the game on. I certainly didn't catch it live. What I did catch live was that soldier out in the outfield, and I mean that metaphorically, so let me take that back. That beast out in the outfield that took that ball, that home run ball, off his
chest.
That
was amazing.
While holding two beers. This is literally turning into a segment of just things that are sort of sports tangent that guys love, but that felt like a soccer player that was like deadening a ball off his chest that he then wanted to kick. This man had beers and all kind of stuff in his hands and just took one right off the chest and just deadened it to where it would fall down and he picked up the ball. I did see that live, but I didn't, until it was pointed out to me, catch either of the pair of breasts that were exposed last night. But behind home plate, sure enough, it's exactly what went down. So I'm not going to throw shade at Fox. I get that somebody should be watching out for that, but boy, in a split second, it's going to be hard to catch that. And I know you've got a 7-second, at least for radio, that's what we have, FCC regulation. So, yes, if any of you try to come on and drop a cutesy little bomb on us, we got 7 seconds to detonate your backside. And, yes, that applies on TV as well. But I'm going to throw shade at the security, right? That's got to be caught, you know, especially in those high, high dollar seats. Wouldn't you agree that that's probably got to be caught? Yeah. Or is that something that's just so hard to stop that even a highly policed and scrutinized area that could obviously slip under the radar?
I think it was one of those things where you're going to want to probably having to catch them. And then, because I mean, both people are now banned for life from MLB stadiums, obviously.
I bet they don't care.
Yeah, of course, because it was all about kind of promoting their brand.
And they're probably Instagram celebrities and heroes now. Let's just go with that phrase. And here I am, and I don't even know how to feel about myself right now, because I think I'm throwing shade at the idea of exposed breasts. So basically, I think I just canceled Mardi Gras for the remainder of existence. So I'm going to take a time out to review my thoughts, my thought process, and figure out that all's still right in my world. But somehow, some way, that probably shouldn't appear on national television, but yeah, I think I'll stop hating on boobs right about now.
We're done throwing shade on Bumper to Bumper Sports. For now, you want your life made in the shade? Visit PatioCenter.com and explore ways to improve life outside your home or business.
I honestly didn't believe it. When my boy first texted me and said, "You've seen what's going around the internet, right?" I'm like, "No, man, I'm at a hunting camp right now where it's very, very limited on some of that cell boosting." Said, "I have not seen." He's like, "Well, look, I'm going to send something to you. I'm going to hit you up with a Facebook DM. Might be easier than you getting text right now with your crappy data situation."
Yeah.
So He sent it, and about 25 minutes later, I giggled like a 13-year-old schoolboy. So here we are, grown-ass man, and still that's what happens.
Exactly. That was just ridiculous seeing all that going on. And you were at a hunt camp over the weekend, right?
Yes.
So you may not have seen what happened, at least in the Acadiana area, when it comes to the World Series.
Go on.
It was probably about the eighth inning.
I am aware of this. My boy Jeremy Holy. Is that where you're going with this?
Yeah, I think
the Breeze impersonator.
No. I saw it during the Astros World Series game five.
Okay, then I'm on a different level of understanding.
So right about 10 o'clock, like it was 9:59, I think. All of a sudden, Fox switches over to Big Bang Theory.
So they had their Heidi moment.
Yes, they had Heidi moment.
Wow.
And then they switched it back with about a minute later. And then it happened again at 10:30, mid-interview, Garrett Cole post-game interview. He's talking, I couldn't tell you who the interviewer was, but talking about the game. All of a sudden, Big Bang Theory again. I could not stop laughing when I realized what was going on.
And yet some meatheads probably yelling at Fausti on Facebook. Just because, you know what I'm talking about, yeah, too.
Yes, exactly.
You know, it's funny to me. The Saints game doesn't come on right when it's supposed to on KLFY, and everybody's like, George, obviously this is your responsibility. Drive to the station and make this happen for us. And they just berate the man all over social media. And it's just probably just some chucklehead, right? Doesn't even care. It's a sporting event.
Yeah.
It's not on the way I want it to be. Faust, you did this. Go on, do this. It's not even a station anymore, dude. No, that's pretty good stuff. But I did see, I thought you were going to make reference to my guy Jeremy Holy.
That was awesome, though.
With the Breeze impersonation. And they gave him, like, the Gorbachev-style little birthmark, but where Breeze has his on his cheek. He looked spot on, like Breeze's.
I didn't know who that was.
It's because you haven't actually probably seen him. He comes on this show once a year to promote the Raging
Games. I've never seen him in person. But
yeah, that's our guy, Jeremy Holy.
I didn't
just
know
out there balling
okay,
on
cool.
the streets
that's
of New
awesome.
Orleans and then in the Dome. That's pretty good stuff right there. So shout out to him. That is the opposite of shade, which, frankly, now that we're going to wind this segment down, I wish I could rewind and take it all back. You told me we should do this. I didn't want to do this. You made me hate on boobs, and now I hate myself. We're going to hit a break. Got a lot of self-loathing going on right now. We'll be back to finish up this hour. Quick timeout, and then more. Bumper to Bumper Sports, live on 103.7 The Game.
This show won't protect your quarterback or cover downfield, but it's got animal control down pat.
Oh, if you see a possum, try to kill it, okay? It's not a pet.
Back to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game.
First of three straight days in the studio for yours truly. I'm not mad at it. 12 minutes to 6 o'clock. We got some more to go in today's program. We'll talk some Astros here momentarily. Don't forget James Buehr's joining the program at straight up 6 o'clock. We'll talk four games from week 8 in the high school football season. Leading off with Westgate over Turlings, and look out for Ryan Antoine's Tigers. They're starting to play up to that potential and all of that talent. That's scary for a lot of people in Class 4A. Clint, I said this is first of 3 days for yours truly. Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, we'll have some fun here. Thursday, I'll be out at the Tap Room River Ranch. And Friday, if everything works out, back to the plush, regal settings of Danny Jones' press box at Cougar Stadium. Karen Crow plays at St. Thomas more Friday. So I haven't ironed that deal out yet, but I figure if I float it out here on live radio in front of millions.
Speaking into existence?
Yes, I'll just Lonzo ball this thing. Or LeVar ball it, actually. I'll speak it into existence. Lonzo just plays basketball. LeVar talks about things. So I'll see if I can't get that to happen. Speaking of the Pels and Lonzo, let me tell you about one of his teammates. This was announced in the last 20 minutes. Drew Holiday officially ruled out of the Pels' home game against the Warriors tonight with a right knee sprain. Alvin Gentry listing him as day-to-day. So I wanted to make sure to slide that at you. All right, now let's get to the Astros. Hadn't touched them on this show yet today. I'll ask you this. It's so strange because we do a daily sports talk show, and yet we have occasional occurrences such as what just happened. Last time we did this show, Friday, 6 p.m. Since then, the Astros have played three games. The complexity of a World Series changes so much on a three-game stretch. They won them all. Most impressive thing in your mind that came out of that three-game winning streak?
I think the most impressive thing, without a doubt, you got to bring it up. It's the offense. The offense was in fuego over the weekend, 19-3 over those three games. That was kind of how things worked out for the Astros, allowing only one run in each of those three games. Yordan Alvarez came alive in his first appearance in an NL Park in the World Series last night, 3-for-3, a ton of RBIs. You saw a lot of two-run shots. You saw them kind of get out in front early and often. I think that was the most impressive part for me.
I'm going to tell you and our listeners in the 6 o'clock hour why I think that the Alex Bregman Grand Slam was maybe the most important thing that happened on the road. But I said most impressive. And sometimes for me, right, wrong, or indifferent, I tend to look at some of these sports angles as, okay, this guy or this like specific part of the team, this unit, is great. I don't have to worry about them. I look at everything else and then say, okay, how are maybe some of the question marks going to perform? Because if the question marks join the elite or great part of the team, well, boy, you're really going to have a chance to take off. We expected that this offense could be great because we saw it in the regular season. All right, they returned to form. Not saying that I'm looking over it or glossing over it, but that's true. We knew that they had that potential. The freaking AL MVP, maybe Bregman. They have a former MVP in Altuve. Springer was an MVP candidate for a third of this season before he got injured. We know they have the goods. The rookie of the year is Alvarez. We know they can hit the baseball. It just kind of came around. We also know that Gerrit Cole is a freak of nature. And so what he did last night isn't unexpected. What I will tell you, how I'm going to choose to answer this question, I believe that Jose Urquidy's start on Saturday night was the most impressive thing that happened during that set. Greinke pitching long enough into game three to get them in a spot where with the lead they could get to the bullpen, get to Will Harris, and go get that dub. You had to get to 2-1. But the swing game of this series was game four. And the question mark was, well, who's going to pitch it? You've already gone through Cole and Verlander. They lost their first time through in this series. Greinke did enough, as I just mentioned in game three. That was the Jose Holstaff game, brother, and Jose Urquidy was a stud. Didn't allow a run. He had electric stuff. That's the one I didn't see coming. It's his first full season in the majors. And if you needed a reminder of that, I thought it was so appropriate and hilarious, Clint. When Urquidy came up to bat, whenever it was, the second or third inning, first career major league at bat. He had never played in the National League Stadium before. He was so new to that stage, and everything about it was foreign to him, and he was lights out. And that was the game that completely changed the series, because down 3-1, you still wouldn't have been able to bury the Strohs, not with Cole Verlander coming up.
Yeah.
Kurlander. There it is.
There we go.
With that two-headed monster coming, you couldn't bury them even down 3-1. But not at a 2-2, and suddenly the momentum's going all the way in the other direction. The start from Urquidy was incredible. And it makes you wonder, what had happened if he had maybe gained a full, say, 2 months of traction heading into the playoffs, right? They were waiting on Miley to come around. He never did. Greinke kind of started to falter toward the end of the regular season. Now he's back where he needs to be. Urquidy, to me, was a revelation.
He really was. It was just amazing to see what Urquidy was able to do all game long. And I think it really helped matters because he came into the game with a 2-0 lead. You saw what they did early on that ball game. Four straight singles to open up the ball game. That was nothing short of impressive. It's like, the odds of that are astronomical to wind up having that go the way that
it
did.
Not as long as the odds are of Yuli Gurriel diving into first base to tag out the bag.
That was
twice in two games. The man did it twice in two games. And look, it was probably the best play both times. There's a reason that Yuli, I think for the first time in his career, is up for a gold glove.
He really is just amazing all the way around. I mean, when you talk about the offense, I think that was the biggest, the most satisfying thing for me. I think the defense is just hashtag as expected when you see what they did, especially in the ALCS. I mean, we were seeing them just nail double plays like it's with the greatest of ease, and they did the same thing in the last two games.
Let me ask you another question. And I'm sure that all of our listeners, our faithful listeners, are listening to the Astros on the World Series. But in case you happen to catch them on the tube, and I have, hey, you know what? I guess after game five, it literally could be the boob tube. Nonetheless, it took you a second there to resonate. Are you enjoying the Joe Buck, John Smoltz combination?
I'm liking it. And, you know, I was talking with Ray about this. We were talking about the fact that it's like this one's probably going seven. Some because of the fact that we need to have Joe Buck at the end of tomorrow night's game, and I would love to see the Astros just wrap it up tonight, but we know Joe Buck is going to want to say, we'll see you tomorrow night.
I will tell you this. Smoltz isn't always the most polished.
Yeah.
But I'm really enjoying that tandem. I think they're doing a great job together. It's entertaining. And at least twice now, I've caught Buck, and maybe you have too if you've watched it, just sticking that knife right into the side of Smoltz when he's talking about the 96 World Series.
Yeah.
It's the last time, by the way, that a team went down 2-0 in a World Series, came back, won 4 straight, and closed it out. Smoltz and the Braves were up 2-0. Leiritz and the Yankees came back and won 4 straight in that one. And he just keeps bringing it up, and it makes for some really great Larry David, Jerry Seinfeld quality cringe television, like almost Michael Scott level cringe television. I'm kind of enjoying it.
That is probably one of the more enjoyable parts of the game, is just the back and forth, the general banter about that World Series being down 2-0. It's amazing just to see how much these two are working well together.
Smoltz's, there's some great behind-the-scenes stories. Again, people that listen to the show understand. I lived in North Georgia for a while going to college, and you just hear some phenomenal Brave stories. And so, I mean, some of the Smoltz stories, the guy was just an incredible athlete. And apparently Jeff Francoeur was a rookie, was coming up, you know, and they liked to go golfing together, and Francoeur thought he had a nice little game going, and routinely Smoltz would just absolutely blast him on the golf course, so much to the point where he called him his personal ATM. That was his nickname for Frenchie every time he was walking up and down the dugouts. That became a thing in and around Atlanta. So now I like John Smoltz, and I think so far that broadcast tandem, they get 2 thumbs up for me. Chuck Norris style.
I like them. I like a lot of what I've heard from them. And you know me, a ardent Joe Buck hater. Am I using that word right?
I see. You're at the point where you're so one-sided, you can't allow yourself to even see if the other side exists. Your argument now insists upon itself. Like, you're not even taking new objective facts in the case. You've made your judgment long ago. Hating on Joe Buck as a broadcaster.
Especially as a football broadcaster. Baseball, he's not horrible.
You'll come to regret these comments. You're just wrong. I mean, you're just.
It's my opinion, man.
And it's a really wrong one. We're 2 hours in. We got a half hour to go. On the other side of this break, James Buehr is talking high school football, not just the Westgate win from this past Thursday. I'm going to dive into a big one from the defending 3A champs, Eunice. Big old win for the Bobcats. That and maybe a little more Astros as we take you closer to Monday Night Football. The pregame show starts at 6:30, and you'll hear it all right here on 103.7 The Game.
From the 237 Roof Studios.
We interrupt our regular program for this special event.
All systems are go at this time.
It's time for the kickoff.
30 seconds.
Standing by.
Okay, listen up.
Get ready for the ride of your life.
Live and local from the 237 Roof Studios in Upper Lafayette.
This is Acadiana's number one sports station.
Number one.
We are number one.
103.7 The Game.
KLWB. Karen Crow Lafayette.
Let's get down to it.
And this is Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love on 103.7 The Game.
And live online at 1037thegame.com.
Is that who I think it is?
The wild, the weird, and the wonderful.
Hell yeah.
And now let's get started.
Rolling into your 6 o'clock hour, welcome back in. It is more Bumper to Bumper Sports as we get you closer to Monday Night Football on 103.7 The Game. Ben Love alongside the famous Clint D. And it's time that we wrap up the weekend that was in football. And that means high school football. To school us on that and more, it's James Buehr's with the Acadiana Advocate. James is waiting aboard the Ardco Equipment Hotline. All right, James, we got 2 more weeks left in the regular season. This continues to fly at a rapid pace, but it's getting fun.
Yeah, no, it really is. And it's crazy that we're already entering week 9 of the season. But it's a lot of fun at this point. You know, we're starting to look at power rankings and see where teams stack up, you know, what matchups are possible, what teams are still in the bubble. There's a few teams that are still fighting for playoff berths. So, I mean, the next 2 weeks are huge, and there's certainly some great matchups coming up on Friday.
I want to look back to 4 games from a week 8 that was largely pushed from Friday night to Thursday night, with one big exception, Turlings Catholic, because they allow Southside to play their home games at Rebel Stadium. That ball game, Southside Lafayette High, was on a Thursday night. Turlings hosted Westgate in a waterlogged Friday night game. It was a high-scoring, lopsided Westgate win. I'll get your reaction, and just how seriously should we be taking Westgate's chances not only of winning this 5-4A district, which they right now are in the driver's seat for, but then also for the Class 4A playoffs, James?
Yeah, no, it's really interesting what Westgate has done so far this season. And, I mean, we've talked about them in previous years having so much talent, you know, obviously with the likes of Kayshawn Butte and McColvin's son, and they've got two other seniors in Keydrain Callaghan and Blaine Del Huse that are also committed to Division I schools. But, well, I think the key for them was kind of becoming a complete team, matching the defense with the offensive skill talent. And, you know, on Friday against Turling, it was a lot of Kayshawn Butte. I mean, he probably had his best game of the season. I think he had 5 total touchdowns, did it in 3 different ways. He had 223 yards rushing and 3 touchdowns. He had a receiving touchdown, and he also returned a kick for a touchdown, which kind of broke Turling's back. They had just taken the lead, but then that gave Westgate the lead right back, and they rolled after that. So Westgate's a very serious team. They could, you know, they keep in mind they won a playoff game last year, so it's not like they're coming out of nowhere completely. But you know, I think the consistency was the biggest thing for them. And Ryan Antoine has told me in the past, you know, them kind of having some stability on his coaching staff with guys being around for 2 and 3 years has made a big difference. They've also added some assistants, some former players of the program, like I forget his name, he's slipping my mind, but he played with the Saints not too long ago. He came back to coach the defensive line, and just, you know, having some cohesion on his staff has made a big difference. And certainly they're a very dangerous team and can make a run. And, you know, it's kind of crazy to think, but if they can, you know, handle business against Northside this week, then that game against Karen Crow in the season finale will be for an outright district championship for Westgate. So a lot of credit goes to Ryan Antoine and his players as well.
James, we're going to go now to Class 5A, and we'll talk about two games played within the same district. First, Acadiana with that Veer offense, you know, the one that's supposed to be slow and methodical and maybe take them to a lot of 24-10 type wins. 84 points in a blowout win over Sam Houston. And look, that's a Broncos team that throws it all around the yard. They scored their fair share of points as well. But how do you reflect on what Acadiana did and the way that they're positioning themselves for the Class 5A playoffs?
Yeah, no, for them to you know, go to Sam Houston and put up the kind of points they did shows me that they can win in different ways. And, you know, at the beginning of the season, it was really their defense that was, you know, it wasn't that they were poor on offense, but I think their defense was giving them a lot of opportunities and holding teams down and allowing, you know, they were scoring in the upper 20s. So it wasn't, you know, 4 by any means, but they were unable to break the 30-point marker in their first 3 non-district games. But then as soon as district play hits, their offense really seems to turn it up a notch. And, you know, for Dylan Monette to go out there and break the school rushing record held previously by an all-time great like Allie Broussard, and for them to, you know, break the points record program issue, which they set in the state championship game a handful of years ago, says a lot to me that, you know, that the Rams can win in different ways. And, you know, Dylan, but Monette, he's struggled with some injuries in the past, but it seems like this year they're not having to rely on him totally. So at this point in the season, he seems fresher. Like, his carry totals in previous games weren't, like, in the 20s every game. So I think at this point in the season, he's got a lot of energy about him. He's got his legs about him. And I think that's big for them, along with having Lucky Brooks and Tyvon Zeno. So, look, the Rams have a shot at being the number one overall seed in the 5A playoffs, which would, you know, certainly be a nice feather in their cap and allow them to have a good chance of making a deep run in the playoffs. But, you know, obviously you don't want to overlook a team like Barb, because Barb's usually the team Acadian is fighting with for the district championship, and they're still a pretty good team this year, even if they've kind of taken a back seat with Sam Houston in the Lake Charles area. So certainly got to come out locked in for this matchup with Barb Friday.
We're getting a chapter and verse right now when it comes to prep football from our guy, James Buers with the Acadian Advocate. James, let's stay in District 3-5A. I've already referenced Southside. Head coach Josh Fontenot joined the program on Friday. They scored a big win and another high point total as the Sharks knocked off Lafayette High. Southside now at 5-3. I believe that's enough to clinch a playoff spot. They've got a chance to continue increasing that win total, James, at Como, home versus Nish to finish the season. So your two cents on the Sharks and maybe what their future holds.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy to think we're talking about Southside in the way we are as being almost a lock for the playoffs at this point, because over the summer, you know, my expectations for them were pretty, you know, pretty small, just because they're a first-year team entering 5A, and you just didn't know how they were going to, you know, fare in that kind of, with that kind of competition. But, you know, how they looked against Notre Dame and the Jamboree said a lot to me and kind of changed my perspective on them. And you know, since then, they've really won all the games they should have won, and even upsetting Church Point to a certain degree was surprising to me early in the season in week two. So, you know, they can put up a ton of points. I mean, they basically scored on everybody they played, even Acadiana. And, you know, Dylan Monette's turning into one of the best all-around quarterbacks in our era, both with his arm and his legs. And he's got two really good receivers in Jack Pruitt and Rhett Pelequin. So Southside's a very dangerous team. But this matchup against Como this week is going to be huge. You know, I think I've mentioned it before, maybe even mentioned it last week. You know, Como and Southside are close to each other, and a lot of kids that ended up, you know, would have gone to Como or started their high school tenures at Como are now at Southside. So it kind of creates a natural rivalry. So it should be a big game, and obviously it means a lot to Como because they're still fighting for playoff spot seeding. You know, they're kind of just inside the, you know, the top 32. So big game for both teams on Friday.
All right, James, let's get you to our fourth and final game that we want to review from week 8 in the high school football season. We'll go down to Class 3A, and the defending state champs, Eunice, took down a 4A giant, at least so far this year. What can you tell us about Eunice over Tioga and maybe the ramifications as that Bobcats team starts to get rolling again toward playoff time?
Yeah, you know, it kind of would have been easy to dismiss Eunice, you know, after they lost their first two games in 4A, because, you know, keep in mind, they've moved up to 4A after winning the 3A season.
That's right, thank you.
Last year. No problem. And I trust me, I get it confused all the time as well. But, no, Eunice, you know, their first two 4A games, they played Brobridge in a non-district game, lost that one, had a ton of turnovers in it. And then they played Rain in their district opener and lost that one as well in kind of a defensive slugfest. So, you know, it would have been easy to kind of put them on the back burner, but I said this last week, you know, Eunice is kind of the masters of hiding in plain sight. Whenever you kind of ignore them or forget about them, they seem to, you know, take it up a notch and surprise you a little bit. And I'll admit, them going to Tioga and winning that game, you know, Tioga was 7-0 coming into it, number one team in the Class 4A power ranking. You know, they hadn't given up more than 21 points in any of their games, with the exception of one, which was against Leesville, and they won that game. So, Leesville's a very good team. So, for Eunice to be able to do that, their quarterback, Simeon Ardoin, had probably his best game season, and they got four total touchdowns from Keol Hill, one of their many junior tailbacks that get the ball. So, it's a Eunice team that we should definitely keep an eye on going forward. You know, I think this win against Tioga shows me that they can go up against a 4A team in the playoffs and potentially beat them. They're not going to be a one and done type of team. So, you know, don't sleep on the Bobcats by any means.
James, before we let you go, I'm going to give you something that it should be a dream, but it might be a nightmare for you. I spend every week in the press box with Karen Crow. Typically, that means Christopher Kovach is around. He reminds me how much practice has already started. I've already gotten my first interview request, not for the Karen Crow High basketball program, but for a kid to come on my show and talk high school basketball. Dude, it's not even Halloween, and people want to start talking high school basketball. I'm not sure I can deal with that. Can you?
No, not quite yet. I mean, you know, we still got the volleyball state tournament coming up, and, you know, I mean, we're not even to the playoffs for football yet. So I'm trying not to think about basketball quite yet, but it'll be fun when we get there. You know, Karen Crow basketball is one of my you know, favorite teams to cover, along with Brobridge and Westgate, pretty much all those 4A teams that, you know, 4A basketball to me in this area is better than any other area in the state. So I'll look forward to it when it comes around. But for now, I'm sticking with football and volleyball.
My wife's already talking to me about putting up the Christmas tree. These coaches want to talk high school basketball. I just need October to be October, and that'd be about football. James, you're the best, man. Thank you.
Thank you, Ben. Have a good one, man.
Thank you. That is James Buers each and every Monday in the 6 o'clock hour. I love that we get to run down what happened in the week that was. Running out of time in this opening segment, so here's the drill. At 6:30, We're going to send you to Monday Night Football, and boy, should you be excited about that. Dolphins, Steelers. You better throw money on it. You better have fantasy on it. Otherwise, might be a tough one. Nonetheless, we will have Monday Night Football, 6:30, your pregame show, kickoff right after 7 o'clock. But on the other side of this break, we've been a little Astros deprived today. They're about to punch a ticket to win the 2019 World Series. They were down 2-0. They're up 3-2. It's been remarkable, and I'll reflect when we return. So on the other side of this quick timeout, we'll be right back in with more Bumper to Bumper Sports.
You're listening to Bumper to Bumper Sports with Ben Love. Missed an interview?
No!
Acadiana Sports Station has got you covered.
Explain how.
Just head over to 1037thegame.com and check out the on-demand section.
Woohoo!
Now back to Ben Love and Bumper to Bumper Sports on 1037 The Game.
Back in one final time on a Monday, and for hopefully one final time tomorrow night, the Astros will take the field at Minute Maid Park. Why do we say that? Not that we don't enjoy the Astros playing home games, but everybody listening, I would imagine, within the sound of my voice, hopes the Stros can close this bad boy out in six in one of the reversals of fortune that you don't see very often in NBA, Major League Baseball, or any other kind of final series. Frankly, it's been remarkable. So let's talk about that as we close out our show today. Stros were down 2-0. Both losses came at home on the backs of their two all-world AL Cy Young competing starters. We understand the ramifications. And I told you on Friday's show, before we got to game three, then we knew it would be three straight in the nation's capital. Games 3, 4, and 5. Starting off with Greinke on Friday night, Urquidy and Bullpen on Saturday night, and boy, oh boy, just find a way to get to Gerrit Cole on Sunday night. I told you Friday, I thought the Astros still probably had a 25-30% chance of winning this series. I told you you should not completely abandon them or write them off. But Houston, we had some problems, is exactly what I said. And those have changed in a hurry. And so now the shoe is on the other foot. You would say the Astros are, I don't know, 75, 80, 85%. Right? If you were to say, what's the percentage chance that they close this bad boy out now, whether in one or two final games, I think you would say at least that range. How did they do it? What changed? What was the turnaround? It starts at the dish. And the straw that stirs the drink so often, I think, for this Astros team is Alex Bregman. The fact that you have a reigning, or I should say 2 years ago, the reigning AL MVP in Jose Altuve, I don't lose sight of that. The fact that George Springer is one of the best leadoff men in all of baseball, was a legit MVP candidate himself up until a back injury in May, I don't completely eschew that either. And they've got other big guns in that lineup, no doubt about it. But Bregman, I think in a lot of ways, is the heartbeat of this Astros team. And when he went four run, grand slam, big fly, and then pimped it with a little walk toward the first baseline, as he kind of did his best modern-day Carlton Fisk and made sure that puppy was fair inside the left field foul line, I think it completely re-energized this entire franchise. Now, there were some things that were going right before they got to that point. Greinke did enough in a short start, just less than 5 innings, but he kept largely big numbers off the board. They passed the baton. Will Harrison Company got out of some potential damage. And the Stros were able to take that game three on Friday night. So some things were going right then. They got a big fly as well from starting catcher, and it wasn't Martin Maldonado, who catches most of the time for Gerrit Cole, but they had gone back to Robinson Chirinos. Well, we've now seen Chirinos hit it over the wall twice in his stay in Washington, D.C. We saw Correa get in on the act, Yordan Alvarez last night. And while the first one of those big blows didn't come off the bat of Alex Bregman, I think that the biggest one did, and not just in terms of numbers with the 4 you get for the grand salami. I'm talking about the biggest one that got everybody else back and bought in. They never believed they couldn't do it, but that was the final guy they needed to show on the field. Damn it, we're about to do it. It's happening right now. And if you watch the way that they all lined up to receive Bregman, that told me all I needed to know and reminded me, frankly, all I needed to know about how this team and this franchise view Alex Bregman, a guy that'll be right there, kind of like the AL Cy Young is neck and neck with Verlander and Cole. He'll be right there with Mike Trout. And so I think that a lot of the offensive wrongs were righted in D.C. The start Saturday night from Jose Urquidy cannot be underscored. It was the best of the World Series until Gerrit Cole took the bump last night and did some very much Gerrit Cole type things. And what may have been potentially his final start ever as a Houston Astro. As we know, he'll fetch big time attention and big time dollars on the free agency market this offseason. But Urquidy was phenomenal. And for him to lay up a goose egg and pass it along to the back end of the Astros bullpen, he bridged the gap. He truly was the Jose Holstaff almost in one. To think that he could do that, he gave the Astros everything on Saturday night that the Nats were hoping for on a wing and a prayer from John Ross last night after the injury to Max Scherzer was fully disclosed. So here we are. The Astros righted the ship offensively. They're hitting it deep and often. They're buying in, I think, with the chemistry after the Bregman homer. The pitching did what it needed to do. Again, workmanlike, but enough in 4 2/3 innings, I believe it was, from Greinke Friday night. Urquidy, as we've been saying on Saturday night, more than what you could have ever expected there. And then Gerrit Cole reminded you why he's going to be that dude on the free agency market this offseason. So here we go. Tomorrow night, Verlander on the mound, closeout situation. And I'm not going to make you wait for my bold prediction tomorrow. I'm going to tell you right now. Verlander will get his first ever World Series win. The Astros will close it out, and this thing will be done in six. I told you before the series it would be done in six. But no way, Jose, did I have it going down this way. So, boy, do I have to issue just an incredible, you know, attaboy, kudos, whatever you want to throw out there in terms of bouquets toward the resiliency of this Houston Astros team. And for all the stuff going on behind the scenes prior to the World Series, lingering like a dark cloud with Brandon Taubman and everything there, I told you then, it's a shame because I just want it to be about baseball. And I think we're seeing that when it's just about baseball, there's nobody better right now than the Houston Astros. It's incredible what they did in Washington, D.C. And if I've read correctly, this 2-0 to 4-2 about face, that hasn't been done since the 96 World Series, when Jim Leyritz and the Yankees turned it on John Smoltz and the Braves. And if Joe Buck could stop reminding Schmaltzy of that in the booth, okay, I'm just kidding. It's actually pretty darn good TV and theater for my two cents. But this isn't common. I told you Friday, hey, it happens. Right? We can all look to various series where we can say, okay, the, you know what? There's some precedent for this. Just because there's precedent doesn't mean that it's easy or it's even probable. It just means that it's possible. The Astros have taken possible and sprinted with it toward the finish line. I think they get there tomorrow night, and I think Verlander gets that World Series monkey off of his back. What a World Series it's been, especially as the Astros turn it around on the Nats. All right, we do have to thank our guest today. It's been a great Monday, October 28th edition of B2BS. And who made it so? Gus Kattengill, talking Saints, Ruff and Rodriguez, remembering LSU over Auburn, and early look ahead to LSU-Bama. We'll be doing that for a few more weeks. And we do want to thank James Buers as well. So we are all out of time on a Monday. I got to give thanks as well to the famous Clint D and all of you for listening, calling in, responding on social media. Got to give it up. Thank you for this great start to the week. My name is Ben Love, and you've been listening to Bumper Sports on 103.7 The Game. Up next, Monday Night Football, Steelers and Dolphins.